Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stephen Platinum with Tipping Point. I'm going to be joined shortly by Miss Rachel and Larry Goodman. This is not our usual open, of course, and in fact, Matt Hankins is with me right now. The reason we're opening, this is actually Matt's idea. I think it's a good one. In light of everything that's happened with Joey Kidman, because we're going to delve into that, and that's your warning too as a listener. We're going to talk about what's going on with Joey Kidman. A lot of people want to know, and some people might be upset about that, that they think that it shouldn't be talked about, but Joseph Kidman he's a pro wrestler, and he's one that I would say that, Matt, would you say that Joey Kidman's probably somebody that 90 to 95% of the wrestlers and wrestling people in Georgia would know?
Absolutely. I mean, he had a run at Peach State. He worked PCW. He had run at AWN, and he came up with that crop of guys that are kind of really running the scene right now. He was, you know, sort of trained underneath a lot of those guys and worked shows with them. So I would imagine anybody who knows about this podcast most likely knows who Joey Kidman is.
Yeah, Joey Kidman. I wrote a full disclosure about it that was filled with anger. I even shocked myself a little bit. You know, for all I can do is talk about what I've been told by people who supposedly know. So without slinging too much mud around, in short, I mean, Kidman, you know, it's probably painkiller related, and he's in a bad way. I did get sort of a glimmer of good news that somebody texted me today, because I had heard everything from, you know, it's only machines keeping him alive to he's likely brain dead. And I mean, just the worst stuff that you could imagine. But somebody said that he had mildly responded to, I guess, you know, like they shine the light in your eyes or whatnot, and that his left eye had a little bit of response in his left foot. Now, that's not, of course, that encouraging, but I guess at this point, any news that's not horrible has to be construed as good news, Matt. I mean, that's sad to say, but I guess that's true.
Well, any piece of information that any of us could get a hold of was, you know, valued like gold, because I'm sure, like most people did, we saw it on Facebook or happened to know somebody who was close to the situation, and all you hear is, Joe is in the ICU. And unfortunately, in the world we live in, you kind of hear that and like, whatever. I'm sure this is being blown out of proportion. And, you know, in a couple hours, Joey's going to pop up on Facebook and laugh at all of us, or, you know, something that somebody misconstrued. Anything could have happened. But when it kept going on and kept going on and kept going on, and you didn't know what was going on, it was at least something to be able to find out some quality rumor, is what I was just kind of treating it as. This rumor is a quality rumor because I trust the sources on it. But still, anytime, you know, you think car wreck or something like that, but a guy that young, anything that puts him in the ICU is terrible.
And, you know, there's a number of other, like, kind of dark clouds looming around this whole thing. I'm not going to get into any of that. I mean, it's a bunch of stuff that would be really damning. So it does require evidence, proof, and honestly, just a sense of timing. I mean, our hearts go out to his mother, who I can't Matt, you've got kids. I've got kids. For a child of yours to be incapacitated like that, or worse, I mean, like, death is a very real possibility. It's so scary. I mean, it's the cliche of it's the parents' worst nightmare. It is. I mean, nobody thinks their kid is going to go before them. Nobody thinks that their kid, in any way, shape, or form, would be horribly injured or die before them. I can't even imagine what she's going through right now.
And that almost, you know, like you just said, this sort of interim period where you hang on to every hope you can, and you hope against hope, as the saying goes, that seemed to me, just personally, trying to put myself in that spot, which I would rather not ever have to do. That seems worse. That you don't know. You know, just not knowing at all and being completely helpless in the situation. It just, it's just heartbreaking, and it would be that way if it was anybody. But Joey was a guy that I had worked a lot of shows with, and I'd seen him, you know, kind of coming up when PCW was still at the Academy, and I saw him get better and better and better, and I saw him start to understand things and grab a hold of things. And he was a guy that I really enjoyed being around. I mean, you know, we'd sit in that Peach State locker room and cut up, and it just, it hit me hard when I finally come to the realization that it really was going on.
He really, I mean, he was, I was thinking of that name Kidman, because he really was, I hate the term man-child. I hate it in sports, you know, mm-hmm. with him, I mean, I met him when he was 18 and just big as a house already, all potential in the world. And it does seem remiss sometimes to talk about somebody in his situation in terms of like their pro wrestling potential. In some ways it seems so trivial. For him, I mean, wrestling really was, it's what he wanted to do. It was his goal. And he, unlike, I'll just be real, unlike a lot of other people who seem to think that they've got the inside track into being a pro wrestler for a living, he had the tools, undeniably had the tools, and seemingly the drive, and it makes what's happened just all the worse. I mean, you can only speculate. You know, was he told that he wouldn't be able to wrestle again because of his back injuries? Like, did that affect him? All of that kind of stuff. Instead of sort of dwelling on the negative, I thought it would be kind of cool to talk about different experiences people had with Kidman. I'll start. It's a good story and a bad story all in once, where Kidman had done something to aggravate me. It was probably bitching about the booking, which he would never do with me directly, but it was usually indirect, sort of complaining about like, oh, I guess I'm the guy who's got a job in damnation or whatever. And I've been known to get a little annoyed when people sort of question their spot. So I decided, you know, it's like, well, Kidman wants to have a win. Let's give him a win. And so it was the debut of Warhorse Sex Bomb. And so I made sure that Kidman saw Fred getting into the Warhorse gear, presumably to be Warhorse Sex Bomb. And, you know, Fred played right along and told Kidman, you know, they kind of worked out what they were going to do in the match. And then Kidman goes to the ring first. And you know, Fred just looks at me and tells me what they're supposed to do. You know, it's like, cool, here's this finish, blah, 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 blah. And I go, great. So I already had all the gear on underneath the green jacket and crap. So I just whip all that stuff off, pull on the Warhorse mask, and then, you know, the music hits, Sex Bomb by Tom Jones, of course. Only I would make a whole gimmick just because I wanted to hear Sex Bomb by Tom Jones. So I go out there and I do my stripper routine where Warhorse Sex Bomb's gimmick is that he wears like 3 or 4 t-shirts and he just keeps stripping them off one by one, ridiculous. And then I go into wrestle Kidman. Kidman legitimately does not know it's not me. Even though I don't know if people have picked up on this, me and Fred Yehi, different skin tone. What's he expecting? You know, it's like, oh, yeah, the booker is crazy enough to get in the ring with me or some kind of punishment thing. So, you know, I let him get the early offense, but then I tie him up in the corner and I just waylay him with some platinum-ass chops, right? That's my thing. And he definitely looked like, oh, not that Fred Yehi can't throw a chop, but especially back then, I mean, my chops were bad intention chops, right? So I'm hitting him hard. And then he calls for the finish mad. Like, he just goes like, finish. And he goes to pick me up. And I just like, cut him off and, like, reverse it into a suplex. And I just freaking deadlift him and suplex him. So at this point, he's like, what? And then I got him on the ground, I'd say, stay there, and I'm just dropping elbow after elbow, and I'm just going nuts on him, and the crowd is going crazy because the War Horses don't win. So it's like, what the hell is going on? And then I let him get the offense back, and he works light as a feather, right? Just light as a feather, and then he goes like, finish? Very politely. And then I just go, yeah, okay. So I take his finishing job, and even though I took the finish because he's, you know, like celebrating or whatever he's doing. And so he comes to the back, and I've pulled off the War Horse mask, and he looks at me, and he goes like, and it still doesn't register, man. It takes him like 5-10 seconds to realize, like, that was you. That's my one. That's my first Kidman story. What's a story that you remember about Kidman, either at Peach State or when you were watching him?
Well, you bring up, you know, some of those nights where you'd get on him hard. And I remember several of those nights. And what always stuck out to me about Kidman was you got on everybody. That's just what you did. But by the time Joey got to us to talk in the parking lot, he was already starting to repeat the things that you had just told him. Hey, how was the match? Oh, Joey did fine, you know. He said, yeah. I said, maybe, you know, your transitions are wobbly. He said, yeah, I think I need to tighten up my transitions. My selling isn't exactly where I want it to be. you know, I need to do this. I need to do this. I need to do this. And these were all the things we had just heard you yell at him earlier in the night. So he always wanted to get better. And then I didn't see him for a long time. And then I would see him at Peach State. And it was like old buddies having a reunion. And the way that he was able to understand, even though, and it, again, going back to, you know, taking the lesson and running with it, he didn't like how Mike was booking him at Peach State, Mike Jackson. Didn't care for it, but he was with it. He committed to it, and by committing to it, he got over it. I remember seeing that he had won, I don't know if it was the junior heavyweight title, whatever, some title he won out there, and they were using him in this big spot, and I couldn't believe it. Like, Kidman? That's the guy they're using? And then you go out there and you see him, and he's much bigger, much more defined than he was.
Yeah.
And you can tell he's having a good time. And that's when he was like, oh, he does. There is a lot of potential there. If he can just stay away from the bad side, you know, stay away from that bad crowd and keep it tight. But no, that was the biggest thing that stuck out was how far he progressed from when he stopped working those Avondale shows and I started seeing him other places.
He, I mean, at one point he was Peach State, he was Heritage Champion. He had their main title. And I think as a result of, like, a battle bowl and stuff like that, he had lost it. But, like, you know, he reached the pinnacle at Peach State. At PCW, he went from another quick story. When we were trying to launch the Empire thing, it kind of had a couple of starts and stops. And but the main start, the one where we finally, like, lit, where the fuse stayed lit, I guess, was the night that the Empire closed off the doors.
Yes, chained the doors
and it was me and Shane Mackey caught in the ring, and Kidman, and so for the trivia buffs, what I would consider the official start of the Empire was Kidman and the guy that always, like, hashtags delicious on every post that he does now. Yoder. My God, Don Yoder. So they were set to attack me and Mackie. And then I thought, wouldn't it be funny if me and Mackie actually got over on them and everyone would get happy? And then Danny and Strick came in and fucking demolished us. But Kidman and both Kidman and Yoder screwed up their spot. It was as simple as you step over the rope, you slide under, but you got to get there fast. You can't make us look ridiculous, but they did. They made us look ridiculous. So I was so mad that I just grabbed Kidman and spiked him on the DD, just fucking dropped him. Boom, right? And then I look over at Mackie because I thought, well, Mackie, you know, I hope Mackie doesn't take it too easy on him because the owner took too long. And I mean, Mackie is there, knee on this kid's back, and just punching the back of his head, just waylaying him, furious that he screwed up the spot. And then I remember feeling jealous that Mackie was looking more badass than me. I was just like, oh. You know, like, yeah, Kidman was that guy, man. He would do what was asked, and you know, again, we just wish him all the best. I'm not even thinking really about, you know, you'll be back there. And I know, I understand it's pro wrestling, and pro wrestlers have a very narrow frame of reference, and it's just like, we're gonna see you back in that ring, Joey. At this point, we just want him back.
I want him sitting up straight. I mean, and to this day, that if any time that Damnation music comes on, the first thing I think is, you better hope it's Kidman.
Oh, my God, that's right. Whenever the Damnation music played, and it was like, you better hope it's Kidman.
Because
everyone else was a killer, right? It was either Fred Yehi, it was Casey Kincaid, or it was Danny. So it was just like, oh, boy, you better hope it's Paul Roma. You know,
I think we've got Miss Rachel and Larry both on the line as well. Let me bring them on.
All right. So, Miss Rachel and Larry Goodman, are you here at last?
One of them is. Give me a second. Whose number is what?
You know, that's the weakness, is I don't know anybody's number off the top of my head except my own and wife's cell phones.
And that is Miss Rachel.
Hello, Miss Rachel.
Am I on now? Can you
hear
me?
You are on now. Yes.
I'm not talking to myself anymore. I've been trying to chime in, and I didn't realize I hadn't been brought in. So I kept, like, trying to throw out these things, and then you guys kept talking, and I was like, oh, they don't want to hear my story about Joey Kidman. That's fine.
No. I mean, you're a girl. We're going to listen to some nonsense. Well, Rachel, since you're here, we're telling friggin' funny-ass stories about Kidman or just great memories. What is your – tell us your Kidman story.
Okay, it's not as funny. It's really kind of more of a summation of everything you've kind of been talking about. But I remember, because Steve and I, we talk quite often, and one of the things that we would discuss every once in a while is if it's better to work a couple of places really solidly or kind of get everywhere. And Joy was definitely one of the people that was always talking about getting to this place and going to this other place, and then he'd be over at this place, and just on every card that he could get on. And, you know, while we would talk about if that was beneficial or not, it really just showed his determination. So, you know, I know he's fighting, that he's got that determination inside of him. So I echo everything you said. We really hope him, he has a speedy recovery, and all the best wishes to his family.
Absolutely. You know, whatever mistakes people make, and you know, goodness knows everybody on the line right now has made mistakes, with the exception of myself. like, I really think that whatever, I mean, if karma is a thing, I just have to think that getting Aria into the business, that Kidman has paid enough.
He has paid his penance.
Wow. Didn't see it going that way. Ouch.
That is the tipping point, Miss Rachel.
That is the tipping point of karma.
And
okay.
I see that we have
Kidman,
a Kentucky area code on. If we
okay, let me just close Kidman real quick. I just we wish him all the best. We certainly hope he makes a speedy recovery and a full recovery. And even though things look very dark, there are, I mean, countless people. I know you guys have seen the post. Countless people praying for him. Countless people wishing him well. And certainly everybody wishes him all the best. And I'm hoping by next week we have much better news in regards to Joseph Kidman. Now I will introduce our next guest. A little background. So OVW, Ohio Valley, which at one point was WWF/E Developmental Area, at one point I thought was maybe the best television show going. I used to go out of my way to watch it. This gentleman, Michael Titus, and I should warn Titus if he's listening right this second before we bring him on, I should warn him that Larry Goodman doesn't like him, which is awesome. I can't wait for them to fight. But Michael Titus and I actually have like a friend in common by the name of Bob Vary, who I'm going to ask him about, in the Colorado area. So Michael Titus kind of made his bones in the Colorado area, where I did as well. And then, you know, put his money where his mouth is, went to Ohio Valley to go get himself a spot, and did it. And we're definitely, so, you know, open field. Ask him about Colorado, ask him about Ohio Valley and all of that. But ladies and gentlemen, a man who my friend Bob said is the new Lethal Litigator, which I don't know if that's a compliment or an insult, but I bring to you Michael Titus. Michael, how are you doing
tonight?
Thank you.
I'm doing very well. Thank you for bringing me on the show. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Michael, I'm going to go ahead and ask you the first question. Tell me, because correct me if I'm wrong, you kind of came on the Colorado scene after I had already left, or am I just an asshole that doesn't remember you?
No, I actually came in around 2007 is when I actually emerged into the Colorado wrestling scene. I worked for a promotion called Rocky Mountain Championship Wrestling. And,
great job.
Yeah, so I was looking around. I didn't know anything about what was going on in the Denver in terms of the wrestling scene. All I heard about was that one time that they were coming to a small little town called Calhan for an El Paso County Fair. And so I went out there. It was Rocky Mountain Championship Wrestling. I thought, this is great. We finally got some wrestling in Colorado. I didn't hear about them for the longest time. Then a year later, I heard that they were having a show up in a little town called Broomfield. And from then on, I tried to keep contacting the promoter and saying, hey, what can I do to get involved with it? I certainly want to be a manager. That's what I want to do. He told me that he has this variety of training packages. I'm like, a blind guy is training us. How is that possible? But okay. And I said, well, you know what? I can't travel all the way back and forth from Colorado Springs. It's over a two-hour drive, and, you know, I just don't really have the money that you're looking for. How about I become your ring announcer? Because I said, frankly, your ring announcers suck. They have the microphone too close to their mouth, and you can't understand a word they're saying. I said, let me try my hand at it. So, and then I did that for about 3 months, and then they decided to shut down. And then I partnered up with a promotion in Colorado Springs, Asylum Championship Wrestling. In December of 2008, I started doing their commentary with my brother, and then just parlayed that into wrestling training, into becoming, did some wrestling matches, and then into being a manager. So
that's great. So when did you make the move? And like Rocky Mountain Championship Wrestling, for those that don't know, they were like the big rivals when I was there to CWO, and it's run literally by a guy named Blind Mike, who is legally blind, who would wrestle and train the guys. Like, he's not making any of that up. And then what predicated the move to Ohio Valley? Like, why did you just go, like, it's time for me to really make that move? Because a lot of guys in Colorado never leave. I mean, that's
the biggest thing, is that a lot of the guys, they never leave. They never want to do anything. A lot of it is because they financially can't afford it. They really are just stuck. And even if they have aspirations, I've got a friend that he wanted to, because he's originally from New York, and he wanted to, and he's living in Colorado, he wanted to move back so he could get with NYWC, so he wanted to get with the New York Wrestling connection out there. But a lot of guys just don't leave. I actually, what happened was, is that I was working for a promotion called New Revolution Wrestling, ran by Matt Yaden. And Matt Yaden, actually, what he did was he got a job with TNA. And he was going to school for business and sports entertainment and all that kind of stuff. He was getting a degree in that. So he went and got an internship over the summer, worked with Al Snow, and I was at the time going to a broadcasting school, getting my broadcasting degree, because I thought, well, you know what? They don't use managers anymore. They just don't in WWE. So my ticket in is announcing. So I thought, well, okay, I need to go get the education for the broadcasting. And when that finally happened, it kind of opened up the door, and Matt Yaden told me, go on down to OVW. That's the new training camp for TNA, and that's going to be the ticket for you. I said, okay.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, so describe what it was like being at OVW. Was it, I mean, what era is this? For those that, like, followed OVW and that kind of thing, like, who are the major players? Who are the people that you dealt with the most at OVW at that time?
Well, when I came into it, it was October of 2012, and so you had Rob Terry, you had Alex Silva, and you had Crimson and Sam Shaw. You had a lot of the big-name players that they had sent down from TNA that they wanted to be from the gut check. So the people that won the gut check, they were down there. So anybody that was around the time that got that big push from TNA to send down there, you had the Taylor Hendricks, and then, of course, later on came you know, a whole bunch of different other people. Doug Williams came around for a while, and you know, Lady Tapa was there. It was a great time for a considerable amount of time, but then it just, in my opinion, it kind of started taking a nosedive. So, as OVW has, from what I understand, in the past, done before. So,
yeah, I wanted to talk about that. I don't know how comfortable you are. I know Rachel's dying to get in a question, but I got to ask. we were going to have Michael Hayes on of OVW. And he had recently, I guess, just quit OVW and said that he's just not going to have anything to do with wrestling anymore. And he sort of hemmed and hawed about, I make it sound bad, but he was waffling between being really angry and bitter and sort of calling out names of the guys that, in his opinion, ruined OVW. And then he decided to take the high road and not say any of that stuff. And I don't know how comfortable you are, like, in your opinion, what caused OVW to not become the great place that it was when you got there?
Well, let me first comment about Michael Hayes. Michael Hayes is a great guy. He's a war hero. He has suffered a lot in his time after being overseas and everything like that. And just what happened was, and I talked to Michael Hayes about this because I said, what happened? This doesn't make sense. You were one of the favorite stars there, even in Danny Davis's eye. And basically what happened is that people pushed him out. He didn't quit. They pushed him out because what he would do is that there were just like yes men surrounding Danny Davis. And so these yes men were doing some negative things towards OVW, and Michael Hayes, he's vocal about it. He's not afraid to say that if something's wrong, something's wrong. And so he did, and they basically gave him the impression that, well, you're no longer needed here because you can't keep your mouth shut. So that was some bad blood there for Mr. Michael Hayes, and I saw a lot of it going on in the back myself. Basically, it's it's poor business. It's really just poor business because they can come up with the storylines to a degree to keep the fans interested, but then all of a sudden they just have a poor business setup. The way I talked to them about it, this is how they thought. They said, I said, well, the fans, you know, they're looking for better storylines. Well, we're not going to give better storylines until we get more of a crowd. Well, the problem is you're not going to get more of a crowd until you get better storylines. So that's the problem right there, is that they don't see how everything works together. They just see what's in the pocketbook and what they're not making, and that's the problem right there.
I did have something I wanted to backtrack just a little bit because I know a lot of the wrestlers in Georgia and kind of around listen. So when you were working before, and then you decided to go to school for broadcasting and then return to wrestling. What was your view? Like, how did they change? How did your approach change after a bit of formal education?
Well, it just gave me a whole new opinion and a new look of how things were, because when I did it in Colorado, we mostly did it on very small things. We didn't have a lot of equipment. We didn't really do a lot of things. I worked with this guy that's ColoradoSports.tv. He ran this internet website that he would record the audio from the matches for a promotion I worked with, and then he would, you know, send it to the promoter, and then they'd add it to the video. But that was as high-tech as they ever got. And then when I worked with NRW, they just basically had little tape recorders, almost the same thing, you know, and then they just hooked it up and spliced it in with the video. But when I got to OVW, they had all the technical stuff that you're supposed to have with the microphones, and they're wired into the back, and it's hooked in, and it goes right into the video, and everything was just very high-tech in comparison to what I've seen in Colorado. So it gave me a greater appreciation, because I was like, hey, I know how to work this equipment. I've seen this before. Now I don't feel like a complete idiot. And also with the counterpart that I had, Gilbert Corsi, who, excuse me for what I have to say, but he's just basically, you know, a 4 o'clock news anchor who serves to the blue-haired ladies that just got out of the dinner special and looking for the closed captions, but he thinks he's the best of the best when it comes to news reporters, and he wanted to snub me and think that I didn't know anything about what was going on. And I was like, no, I know exactly what's going on when it comes to broadcasting, so...
Wow. Michael, thank you for sharing all that. I have a question about, we have a mutual friend, I mentioned it before, Bob Verhey, and he's with Diane Devine, and the two of them are, I consider them sort of institutions in Colorado wrestling. Like, a lot of the wrestlers might think of them as just fans, but it's really the opposite. I think Bob is a guy that any number of the wrestlers communicate with, and who he helps out. Like, he's always, like, he was a big advocate of Jack Zahler, who I actually brought into PCW just on Bob's recommendation, you know. And Bob does that kind of thing all the time. And Diane, if I'm correct, was one of the first, if not the first, female promoter of wrestling in that area. And so you impressed Bob, which is significant, because Bob hates everything. I don't mean in wrestling. Bob hates everything. Bob complains. I mean, Bob is like, he's not Jewish, but he should be. He hates everything. What do you think, how did you catch Bob's eye? How did that possibly happen?
Well, he first told me that one of the reasons why he saw something in me was that I brought in what I considered, and what I tried to do, is to bring like an old school flair to what I did with announcing and managing. Because a lot of the stuff that these young guys were doing, it was just, there's nothing of substance. They really just stood at the ringside, or they pretended to try to do something. And the biggest thing that I attributed to is that they didn't believe that they were doing it. Because even if you truly don't believe what you're doing, but you make the fans believe that you are into it, that you really are this character, that you are this, you know, despicable human being that would say this horrific things to people, and that you would go around and associate yourself with these horrible people, but you don't really believe that you're a bad person, but you made the fans believe it. And that's a lot of times that I see with a lot of these young guys, is they don't believe it. And that's why the fans aren't buying it. That's what is that the magic is disappearing. That's what he's talking about, how the kayfabe is dying and all that kind of stuff. So for Bob, he saw that in me. And because at the same time, I respect the man for what he's done in this business and what he's done to help a lot of the guys out and the connections that he's made, and especially Diane, especially out in Missouri.
Yeah.
The, a lot of things that the two of them have done together, and they were putting together cards that were phenomenal, and they were doing tremendous things in Colorado until people just thought, well, they're just two old fogies that don't know anything. But when they've come to find out that they know a lot more than most of them will ever remember, you know, so they've forgotten more than anyone will ever know. So,
I mean, I don't know how many times when I was hanging out with Bob and Diane that you would be at Cauliflower Alley Club or just around town. I mean, like, you know, you'd run into Danny Hodge, and then Danny Hodge and you know, Diane Devine would talk to each other like they've known each other for decades, because they have, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or Bob would just show old footage of, like, you know, this is Diane giving, like, X-Pac his start. This was, like, his first match in the near the West Coast, and it was for Diane, and, like, all of that kind of stuff was
exactly.
Absolutely amazing. I got one last question for you, Michael. So are you – I didn't really get this from talking to Bob. Are you still managing? Are you still part of pro wrestling, or is that something of the past for you?
Well, I left OVW at their January edition of the Saturday Night Special. They – kind of tarnished my view and my love for wrestling as time went on, because of the way that they orchestrated themselves, the way they ran their business, the way they had certain individuals running as bookers. And so it just kind of, I lost the passion for it. Now, some could say that that's just the real world view of the way it really is in WWE or TNA or something like that. But also, I don't think it's that to that degree the way that it is, because from what I've talked to, and I had a friend that actually did some tryouts with it. My brother actually has a friend that was an NXT superstar, and they all say that, yes, there is some chaos and disorganization, but they're more organized than anyone else. But as of right now, I'm not managing anymore. I have no prospects of ever returning to wrestling at this point. You know, if something were to open up down the line that I was interested in, then I would look into it. But at this point, it looks like that part of my life, that chapter, is closed.
I mean, I think that's a shame. I mean, I certainly don't blame you. I hope, you know, Larry was interested in this idea of sort of looking into OVW, sort of like past, present, and future. And if we continue to do pieces on OVW, I would love to have you back on again. If you had to name someone at OVW who everything from there's somebody that you respected to, you know, they know where the bodies were buried, like all that, who is that guy at OVW in your opinion?
well, that guy would have to be the second in command, Danny Davis's right-hand man, that's Trailer Park Trash, Frank Miller. He knows more about what's going on around there than anyone else. And if he doesn't, there's only one other person that would know besides Danny, and that's Dean Hill, the longtime announcer they've had for over 20 years, almost 30 years now, so, because he's been doing it for about 27 now. So, yeah. So those guys are the three heavy hitters that know a lot about what's going on in OVW, and they know everybody.
Yeah. Well, Michael, I can't thank you enough for coming on. You're a great guest. I mean, just listening to your voice, clearly you've got the chops, and hopefully you find some kind of avenue in broadcasting, because you certainly are a sharp, sharp young man with a fantastic voice. And again, thank you so much for coming on.
Well, I appreciate it, Stephen. I appreciate it, Rachel. And Larry Goodman, if you ever want to face up against me anytime, I'll tell you what, you don't have to look very far. I'll put on the boots, I'll put on the tights, I'll face you inside that squared circle, and I'll beat you with an inch of your life, Larry Goodman. You don't mess with me. Just like I told Larry Nelson, just like I told all the Larrys that I've ever encountered in professional wrestling, nobody is better than Michael Titus.
Oh, come on. Don't even get a question.
If you want a question, go right ahead.
No,
you're running
Larry.
Out of time.
No, Larry, go ahead, Larry. Especially after he just cut that.
Michael, it's a pleasure to speak with you. I was curious specifically about two things: your hairstyle, for one, and two, when you went from the announcing booth to managing at OVW and being the mysterious authority figure, could you just talk about those two things before we let you go?
Okay. As far as the hairdo, growing up, I always wanted to have something, some type of unique hairstyle. And a lot of people don't realize this. They've made references to Elvis. They've made references to Ace Ventura. They've even, you know, Johnny Bravo, they've even said. But really the inspiration came was an amalgamation of the hairstyles of Jimmy Hart and the Honky Tonk Man. And I was like, well, I can't grow hair down to, you know, and have a mullet because I don't have a neck. And then I can't have a greasy hairstyle, so I'm going to try to make it my own. And so I created my own pompadour. And then as far as the transition into managing, it was just such a screwball situation. I tell you what, there was no clear-cut reason why any of that should have happened. There were so many talks in the works that it was going to be myself versus Danny Davis, and it was going to be I'm going to come in and take over the company. Well, they didn't explain that there was a little tidbit of information that was left out. There was a guy that used to be a business partner with Danny Davis, Ken Wayne, and he and I were supposed to team up together and take OVW away from Danny. Well, unfortunately, Ken Wayne got himself into some legal trouble, so therefore he was out of the picture. Then they wanted to have some sort of situation where I was like some running a mafia, and I was the upper boss, and then we had a lower boss, which would have been Timmy Danger. And then they all said, well, no, that's kind of screwball. They just can't figure it out, so let's just have you go give him a nut shot, and then you're the new boss. It's like, oh, okay. And then if anybody knows me as a manager and has seen any of the footage that I've ever, you know, had in wrestling and been in the corners of any of the wrestlers that I've had, I'm all around the ring making a lot of noise, making a lot of movement and everything like that. Well, when they transitioned me into manager, they just wanted me to stand in the corner and keep my mouth shut. I was like, are you kidding me? That's not who I am. And so I had to really fight against it to allow me to do anything at ringside because, oh, no, 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 you can't do that. So.
Wow. Well, we're putting together a best of tipping point, you know, on the off chance that we need to take a week off or when if it falls on like a major holiday or something like that. And that promo that you just cut on Larry Goodman is definitely making that cut. Thank you again, Michael Titus, and we will talk to you again soon. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, folks. You have a good day.
Woo! Woo! Well, I think we need a little break, and then me, Larry, and Rachel will make s'mores and talk some more.
You have reached the voicemail box of
the father of four, Mick Foley.
Please leave your best joke at the sound of the bang.
So there's three guys. There's an Englishman. There's a Frenchman. And there's an Irishman. There are three flies buzzing around overhead. And each one of those flies falls into the beers sitting in front of those three guys. So first the Englishman pushes the beer away, saying, I won't drink it. It's dirty. Then the Frenchman takes his fingers, plucks out the fly, and throws it away, and finishes his beer anyway. But finally, the Irishman, he looks down in his beer, and he takes out the fly and starts smacking it on the back and says, spit it out, you bastard! Spit it out!
It's Gary Hart calling in to tell a joke. How many Von Erichs does it take to screw in a light bulb? It only takes one, but Fritz is going to shove four more down our throats. That's a joke, my friend. The great Mutsa, the Pearl of the Orient, told me, and I laughed very hard.
I love Gary Hart. Well, Larry, I don't know if you heard any of the discussion we had. I definitely want to get to, you know, your last weekend in Georgia wrestling and Rachel's as well. But did you have any kind of thoughts on Kidman or any Kidman stories to tell? We were having a good time telling some Kidman stories.
Well, I can first, of course, echo the sentiments that were expressed of just hoping that Joey comes through this and we have him back. I don't have a Kidman story. I just always think of Bill Barron saying, that man has no ass. One other related thing I wanted to mention, and this was spurred by reading your latest Full Disclosure column, Steve. I heard from someone at AWE who wanted to clarify regarding Jimmy Rave missing the Masquerade show. It was a personal situation, but it was not a substance use or anything like that type situation. So just to clarify.
Well, that's definitely good news. I mean, Jimmy has had like sort of a long battle and, you know, everyone wants to see him come out of it. And it's been last year was a great year for Jimmy Rave, and I hope that continues. So that is definitely great news to hear. You know, I think this is actually a great, I want to talk real quick about what Larry, obviously you went to the, I don't know what you would call it, but the combination of Roar, Monstrosity, and AWE on Friday, and then you were at Anarchy on Saturday. I just wanted to ask you about the AWE Roar show, first of all. So tell us about that Mickey Knuckles-Aisha Sunshine match, which sounded like it was an absolute barn burner. Did that... I mean, you know Mickey Knuckles, and Mickey Knuckles has gone up against every, like, heavy hitter as far as just hardcore male wrestler in the business that it seems. Did Aisha, and be honest, I mean, did Aisha really hold her own against Mickey Knuckles?
In all honesty, she absolutely did. She gave back as good as she got, and for people that were there that may not have been taking the show all that seriously to that point, they took that match seriously. There was no way they couldn't. It was brutal. And I definitely my favorite Aisha match that I've ever seen.
That's fantastic. I mean, Aisha has lit up the Masquerade on more than one occasion and definitely did herself proud there. Moving on to the Anarchy show, and Larry and Rachel can both speak on this. And now Rachel has been a part of any number of phenomenal moments there lately. The show slam of Michael Judas, you probably wouldn't think of that as a phenomenal moment for her, but it got one of the reputed 10 biggest reactions in that building's history, and that's really a significant statement. So talk about, Rachel, if you could walk us through, and then Larry, please comment on the slaps heard around the state.
I love that that's what it's being called now. It sounds so patriotic. It really boiled down to the fact that BJ, who I've managed, was the former Anarchy heavyweight champion, never got a match in return to try and reclaim his title. I believe we had talked about the tag team match where Jagged Edge actually ended up with this title match against Billy Buck. So, you know, of course we want to go and watch this match. This is important because BJ, we had set up, would have a match against the winner at Hardcore Hell. So, you know, Jeff G. Bailey was out there. Obviously, Jeff G. Bailey and I aren't the best of friends, but of course I'm cordial. And some words were exchanged, and BJ is a wonderful person, came to my rescue. And Jagged Edge actually came out of the ring to, I guess, start a fight with BJ. I'm really not sure what his full intentions were, but it definitely got quite heated there. And, you know, BJ is really passionate about the company, about the title. So upon being attacked and provoked, went into the ring and fortunately, there was a match going on, and Jagged Edge was the... I'm sorry, he did lose through disqualification. So the match that I had worked very hard to get for BJ is not happening quite like I anticipated. Now it will be a three-way match with Billy Buck, Jagged Edge, and BJ Hancock, which did lead to the slaps. You know, I'm sure that Jeff G. Bailey had something to do last minute with this change, and, you know, I just wanted to let him know very cordially in the ring that that was not acceptable. Again, passions rise with wrestling. Things got a little out of hand, but the main thing is a man should never put his hands on a woman, and Jeff G. Bailey can't seem to learn that lesson.
I heard you slap the living shit out of him. I heard that the slap that you hit him with was worse than a punch, that it was just this, like, high-impact, brutal. You hit him first, correct?
That is correct. Of course, there have been other blows traded, but I certainly don't feel bad. Any man that would put his hands on a woman deserves to slap his heart.
Larry, when they struck each other, when Rachel and Jeff struck each other, what were you thinking and what was the reaction from the crowd?
Well, I mean, I was thinking, holy shit. I didn't realize how hard the slap Rachel gave him was until I saw Bailey's cheek. That thing was so red, it was unreal, really. I mean, you really nailed it. But the other thing was, and there's a common thread here with Aisha and Mickey Knuckles, is it generated a spontaneous emotional reaction from the people in the crowd, just like that match did. It just, like, moved them like few things in pro wrestling move people these days.
Well, that's certainly an amazing thing. As Rachel continues to be a big story at Anarchy and obviously at PCW, something that she's had to shed, I think, is the label of valet. And I'll still have to correct people once in a while where they'll just go like, oh, how'd you land a valet like Rachel? I think Joe Black said that to somebody. And I mean, I couldn't help it. I just said she's not a valet. And I think it's so hard to overcome, especially because Rachel is attractive by any measure, right? Rachel's a very attractive woman. And women tend to be reduced and objectified, not to get all, like, college preachy on us. So we have actually, this is what we call in the business a segue. So we have decided to let Rachel fight back with the objectifying. Rachel, do you want to talk about this exclusive interview that you nabbed and this segment, please?
I do. And, you know, we kind of talked about it last week. This is probably one of the biggest stars that we have had on Tipping Point. I would argue that it is potentially one of the biggest stars we will ever have. One of my personal favorites, somebody who's, you know, supported the World Heavyweight Championship, the Tag Team Championship, the Intercontinental Championship, and the United States Championship at WWE, along with several other accolades. If you gentlemen will help me, please, to introduce Dolph Ziggler's ass. And, you know, I just want to go ahead and jump right in there. You know, we're already kind of running late on time. So, Dolph's ass, you've been with WWE for quite a while now, and there are certainly newer, younger asses in the ring today. What do you say to people who talk about wanting to see you phased out for the new asses in the ring?
Guys, I'm best in the world. Just ask me. You know what I mean? And it's
Absolutely, I completely agree. And you signed in 2004 and have had an amazing opportunity to work with countless other numbers of superstars. Who would you say has been your favorite to work with?
I had a blast working with John.
Of course, John Cena is definitely a good-ass wrestler. What is the best feedback that you've gotten from him?
I've been told I'm too loud.
And certainly, loudness is something that is never underestimated in wrestling. And there are plenty of new lab people coming in. Who's somebody that's really stood out to you or done something that's really stuck with you?
And for some reason, Dean Ambrose bumped into me a little bit.
Oh, my. Certainly a finance worker with Ambrose, and he's shooting up there in popularity. Does that ever intimidate you?
I show them how damn good I am at this!
Absolutely. I want to get a little more personal. What do you hold is your biggest accomplishment?
Can I make it grosser? Can we be gross with each other?
Oh, please do. I would never stop you. Continue, please.
Every night I deliver! I deliver!
Can I make it grosser? Can we be gross with each other?
Certainly this is getting very emotional. We are running quite a long time, and I know we have a little bit more to go through tonight, so I just want to say thank you to Dolph Ziggler's ass for joining us tonight.
I'm into some weird
and
stuff.
Then we definitely hope that you'll come back onto the show soon.
A definite first here on Tipping Point. Rachel, so Dolph Ziggler's ass, let's just be honest, how amazing is it? I'm just not a good judge on men's asses anymore.
So I'm going to put it this way. The biggest thing that guys get criticized for is not knowing how to work the hard cam. Dolph Ziggler's ass works hard cam like nobody's business, and I could not be happier for that. That is probably my favorite part watching WWE.
Real quick before we go into the end, it is St. Patrick's Day. A happy St. Patrick's Day to all the listeners of Tipping Point, and of course to Larry and to Rachel. Larry, where are you going to be this weekend?
Possibly nowhere. I'm not sure if I'm going to go to any wrestling, and if I go, I have no idea where it's going to be.
Wow. Rachel, you may be in Florida, correct? What's going on at PCW right now?
Yeah, unfortunately, with the Brass Knuckles incident and then the slap I received, medically probably not going to be able to come to PCW, so I'm just going to go ahead and make my way down to Florida. But we will have a Scarecrow match with Johnny Danger and Carpenter for sure, and plenty of other great matches. I'm not entirely sure, but we'll be posting things on the Facebook page, of course.
Awesome. I thought, you know, it would be appropriate before we close the show with the Mr. T holiday memory.
Once again to express our hope that Kidman recovers. To our hearts definitely go out to his fans, his friends, his family, especially his mother, who has been so gracious about making sure that people are sort of kept aware of Joey's situation and how much all of their prayers are appreciated. Just a real class act. And my little final Kidman thing for tonight is he always spoke so highly of his mother. He was very effusive in his praise and love of his mother, which in a very macho kind of business like pro wrestling was really refreshing to hear, actually, just how much he thought of his mother, how much he respected the people that he respected. I mentioned Jake Slater in that tipping, in the full disclosure. I just remember, like, Jake Slater having such a big hand in the early days for Kidman and training him and trying to instruct him in that great way that wrestling trainers should, of just not only the moves in the ring and hitting the ropes and all of that kind of stuff, but how to conduct yourself publicly. And I feel the need to mention Jake Slater again, just because I think he did his level best and just did such a great job with Kidman. But do either one of you have another Kidman story or memory or comment?
Oh, sorry, I was on mute. I'm just talking, and I'm not even there. So you're talking about Kidman and how much he respected his mother. It made me think about how much she really put in towards his career and how much support he got from her. and how much all of the PCW locker room got support from her when she washed his tights. But I think that that's something that we can all be really glad for. Like you said, that there's so much. Thanks, you caught that one. That there's so much support for him from obviously his mother and his family, as well as much as people hate this term, his extended wrestling family.
Larry, any final thoughts?
I think you guys have pretty well covered it. I wish Joey absolutely the best in his recovery.
Well, this was a very, of course, you know, tipping point. It's a relatively new show, and this was obviously the most, I guess, serious and somber one that we've had. But it is St. Patrick's Day. And, you know, it's tipping point, and that means if it's a holiday, we're going to go out laughing and thinking about Joey Kidman with a holiday memory from Mr. T. See you next week for a tag team show featuring the Washington Bullets.
Armor Day, Boxing Day, Bastille Day, Remembrance Day, Canadian Thanksgiving.
It's now time for Holiday Memories with Mr. T.
Dear Hoot, Salenta, top of the morning to you. This is the time of year when all the world is green. Not the kind of green that makes Mr. T worry about his carbon footprint, but green like my mother's beautiful Irish eyes. This is the time of the year when the world comes together to celebrate my mother. As she ran the snakes from Ireland.
Well, I think that's beautiful, man. And that's just beautiful. It's beautiful when you...
Shut up, fool! What you have done to my mother over the years is criminal. You have been a fang in the sides of the T family for decades. First, you attack my mother as she's about to win the battle royal, and you scare her off with that awful snake. And next, you ruin my mother's wedding. You are a man who uses sinks and trash cans as toilets. You are a man who made karate pants look bad. And what you told at my mother's funeral was unconscionable. And they put you in the Hall of Fame? Don't get this sucker no statue. I don't want to hear about your yogurt. Because you can't yogurt nothing. Mr. T has plenty of cultures in his diet. March 1986, that is when you made your debut in the World Wrestling Federation. And that is why, from this day forward, Mr. T will never celebrate St. Patrick's Day again!
This has been Holiday Memories with Mr. T.
What just happened?
There was a yogurt culture joke in there. God.
The intro.
That's the okay.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast.
The member and day.
Brought to you by the GWH Radio Network.
Is that really a
stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information
I
on upcoming
so.
Events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.
I'm sure it's much more polite than our Thanksgiving.
I'm sorry. Oof. I didn't eat the potato sooner. I need that as my ringtone. I need the whole entrance to that as my ringtone. That is phenomenal every time. Oh, my gosh.
Well, good stuff. See you guys next week. Uh-oh, where's the creepy random voice? Where are you? Where are you?
I don't know that I know how to end this.